Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Tuesday, April 12, 2022. A senior SPLM-IO official is killed in Unity State.
We have received the information that the deputy chair of the SPLM-IO in Unity State was among the civilians that was killed in Lare.
And the UN mission in South Sudan says thousands of South Sudanese are displaced in Lare County.
The UN mission in South Sudan is conducting patrols and is working with communities to quell tensions. And the SSPDF reportedly also deployed there to help restore order.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations and local officials say thousands of civilians have been displaced in Lare County of Unity State after clashes broke out last week between the SPLA-IO faction allied to first Vice President Riek Machar and another SPLA-IO faction allied to General Simon Gatwich. The spokesperson of the United Nations mission in South Sudan says UNMISS deployed its Ghanaian contingent of peacekeepers to deter further violence in the area. The Lare County Commissioner says the humanitarian situation is getting worse. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Linda Thomas, spokesperson of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, says several villages in southern Unity State were attacked and burnt during last week's clashes, forcing 1,000 families to flee their homes to nearby areas for safety.
The UN mission in South Sudan is conducting patrols and is working with communities to quell tensions. And the SSPDF reportedly also deployed there to help restore order. While relative calm has returned, the situation for people in Lare remains critical.
Lare County Commissioner Stephen Tecker confirms women were raped, houses were burnt, cows and goats were looted. Tecker says 13,930 people have been displaced. He says 5,700 are taking refuge in Mam cantonment site and 8,000 others have sought refuge at Lare County headquarters. Tecker believes the number of displaced persons is even higher because many civilians were unable to reach the two centers. Speaking yesterday from their hideouts in swamplands, some of the displaced told this program yesterday they couldn't reach the centers. Tecker says the IDPs are in urgent need of humanitarian assistance.
Everything that they have has already looted. Situation is completely bad. We talked to those of humanitarian agencies to work very hard that there will be a response. And even this morning I talked to UNHCR. They have a meeting today, and I believe tomorrow they will send the team to their county headquarters to come and witness what did happen.
Tecker is calling on the two sides to stop fighting and urge the national government to quickly investigate the root causes of the conflict and hold the perpetrators accountable for their actions.
My message to all the son of Unity State, to the field commanders from IO and Kigwang, is stop fighting, because continue fighting, that will not bring the real sun.
Tom says since the beginning of this year, Lare residents have been cut off due to fighting, which has left people killed and thousands displaced. Tom says calm has returned to the area, but the humanitarian situation remains critical.
Our Ghanaian peacekeepers are on the ground, providing protection to internally displaced people and are working with local authorities to ensure their security, and they're also providing drinking water and basic health services.
The SPLM-IO Acting Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Gabriel Dopelam, had told the reporters the fighting was between SPLM-IO forces and militia groups allegedly backed by the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. But Unity State Acting Information Minister David Guy denied government forces backed the Ketgwang faction. The fighting comes just days later after President Salva Kiir, Machar, and the South Sudan Opposition Alliance signed a security deal brokered by Sudan requiring the parties cease hostilities. Tom says as intercommunal violence continues to surge in parts of the country, UNMISS is urging all parties to respect the 2018 peace agreement. With less than 10 months of the transitional period remaining, Tom adds, it's more important than ever that stakeholders implement the remaining benchmarks of the deal to restore peace. For VOA News, I'm Wak Simon Wudu in Juba.
The press secretary of South Sudan's first vice president, Riek Machar, says a senior member of the SPLM-IO was killed during the ongoing fighting in Unity State. Pok Bot Balang says the Unity State SPLM-IO chairperson was killed earlier this week by armed youth allied to the South Sudan People's Defense Force.
We have received the information that the deputy chair of the SPLM-IO in Unity State was among the civilians that was killed in Lair, Unity State, after the barbaric attack was carried out by the SSPDF plus the armed militias that allied to the SPLM-IG in the area. And the armed militias was under command of the two commissioners, the commissioner of Kuch, Kong Biel, and the commissioner of Mayandit, Galwak Nyang, plus with the help of the commissioner of Lair, Honorable Chakiriek.
How is this affecting the implementation of the peace agreement? 2 weeks ago, the SPLM in government and the SPLM in opposition agreed to move forward with the implementation of this agreement. How is this fighting affecting the morale?
Well, first of all, we'd like, on behalf of the SPLM-IO, would like to convey our sincere condolences to the families and friends of all the deceased and all the civilians who was killed recently in Lair and all over South Sudan. The attack, it is a violation to the cessation of hostilities agreement, and it's a violation to the ceasefire agreement as well. The incident started when the SSPDF has attacked our cantonment site in Mirmir, which is one of the cantonment sites designated by the JDB in South Sudan to contone the SPLM-IO forces ahead of joining the other party forces in the training centers. We condemn this attack and all the attacks carried out by the forces of the SSPDF, because there is an attack which has caused the life of the DVD chair of the SPLM-IO, was led by a colonel in the SSPDF by the name of Wiriel Diang. So we met today, the first vice president met today with the joint team of CITESAM and RJMAC to get to the bottom of the incidents there in Lair. His Excellency, the first vice president and chairman of the SPLM-IO, Dr. Riek Machar, has narrated them what occurred in the area, and the CITESAM, they have expressed their concern to the reason or the fresh attack on the civilians in Lair, and they have pledged that they will continue investigating the incidents and also the incidents in Liang, cantonment sites in Maban, which is in Upper Nile, and also in Joko, because there's still attacks on those areas. So to us, this is and a continued plan to avert the country back to war by the SPLM-IG and their forces and their militias. And from our side at the SPLM-IO, we are committed to the implementation of the peace agreement. And the agreement, if it happens that it collapsed, it would not be from our part. We urge the grantors and the security mechanisms and the monitors of the peace implementation agreement to investigate these incidents, even though they are known to the public. And we, this time around, we want the perpetrators to be brought back to books.
How would you react to what the government is saying, or what the SPLM in government is saying, that what is happening in Unity State is fighting between SPLM-IO factions?
I would like to refute this baseless and fabricated information. There's no any SPLM-IO factions are fighting there. There's only one SPLM-IO. We don't have factions. Secondly, we don't kill.
You have a faction led by General Simon Gatwich, the Kitgwang group.
There's no presence for Kitgwang in that area. We have recorded audio and videos for the commissioner of Gwid County, which is now alleged to be a member of Kedgwang. And that commissioner was appointed by President Salva Kiir to represent the SPLM-RG. And it's worth mentioning that the county commissioners was appointed even before the defection of Kedgwang. So I would like to assure the public that this information is not true. There's no any presence for Kedgwang in Unity State in general.
How are the two groups going to sit down and talk peace? Because this is surely interfering with the implementation of the peace agreement.
Yeah, for sure. It's a grave violation, and it's an inhumane act to attack unarmed civilians. Yesterday, His Excellency Dr. Riek Machar has reached out to President Salva so that they can discuss the incident in Lare and the other incidents in Upper Nile, as was agreed in the matrix in the recent agreement on the structure of the Unified Command. However, President Salva Kiir has just sent the minister, Barnaba Marial Benjamin, where the two discussed the incidents, and it's agreed that there will be an investigative team that will be sent to Lare to investigate the incidents. And the president has requested our chairman to submit names of two members of the SPLM-IO to be absorbed in the team that will be formed by president to go and investigate the incidents.
That spoke Both Balang, the press secretary of the South Sudan's first vice president, Riek Machar. He spoke with me from Juba earlier today. The spokesperson of the South Sudan People's Defense Force denies SSPDF attacked SPLA-IO in Lare County. Major General Lul Roy Kong says SSPDF forces are in control of Lare County.
We are in control of Lare. So he's talking of fighting in Lare, and then there's no way we would attack ourselves at Lare. Let him, if he's talking about the surrounding villages, let him give you the names of the location that allegedly came to the attack for me to counter-check.
That was Major General Lul Roy Kong, spokesperson of the South Sudan People's Defense Force. He was speaking from Juba. Authorities in Unity State's Mayom County have freed more than 50 inmates accused of petty crimes. The inmates were pardoned by the Unity State Governor. Dengai Deng has more for VOA from Juba.
Mayom County Commissioner Chual Gadluak says his office coordinated with the Governor Joseph Mointuil's office to release 58 inmates. Gadluak says among those pardoned and released were inmates who had been jailed for crimes like cattle raids last year.
They were charged with different cases of cattle thefts, raiding and stealing other people's properties. We thought that there were small and minor crimes. That was why we suggested to the Governor that they are released, and the governor accepted.
Galwak says prisons are extremely overcrowded and authorities wanted to decongest their facilities to avoid endangering the health of their inmates. He says the freed inmates exhibited good behavior while in prison. Mayom resident Samuel Tut, whose cousin was released, welcomes the governor's decision to pardon the inmates.
Some of them have been in the detention for more than a year. And you know justice, there is a saying that justice delayed is a justice denied. Sometimes the issue of being delayed from going to court could make someone suffer in detention sometime innocently. It is good that they are pardoned, but the authorities should always make sure that suspects are tried or released instead of detaining them for a long period of time without trial.
Tut says some inmates were in prisons for years without being arraigned in court. President Salva Kiir has acknowledged South Sudan Prison Service should be allocated more money and the justice system needed reforms when he visited a Juba inmate facility in 2019. Kiir promised the transitional government would provide more funding for the National Prison Service. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, women working as mechanics in Uganda say they love their job. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
where do you get your health advice from? Sometimes I get my health advice from my grandmother who is at home. When I'm sick that I can't control myself, she'll help.
I get my health advice from my friend, colleague, who live together with those who know about, those who have been experienced more problems about health. They don't advise me through phone, we talk, we chat, discuss everything.
My dad, because my dad is a doctor.
I'd say I get my health advice from various places, the internet, my parents, because I have, my mother is a nurse.
My health advice, I get it on the internet. If I need something on how to deal with obesity, I get it on the internet. Anything I need pertaining to health advice is on the internet.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we look at environmental issues. The World Health Organization says more than 15 million deaths around the world each year are due to avoidable environmental causes. As the world marks the World Health Day Thursday, the World Health Organization intends to focus on urgent action needed to keep people and the planet healthy and foster a movement to create societies focused on well-being. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
The World Health Organization cites a polluted planet with increasing diseases like cancer, asthma, heart disease as points of focus that need urgent attention. WHO says the climate crisis is the single biggest health threat facing humanity today. In Africa, non-communicable diseases are set to overtake communicable diseases, maternal, neonatal, and nutritional conditions combined to become the leading cause of death by 2030. Senior Special Scientist at the South African Medical Research Council, Karari Wright, says the use of dirty fuel is creating health hazards in the region.
These impacts cause approximately 1.1 million deaths in Africa, according to a recent study in The Lancet. About two-thirds of those deaths are due to household air pollution, and one-third are due to ambient or outdoor air pollution. Urbanization is one of the main drivers of air pollution in Africa. Another driver is population growth. The use of dirty fuels such as wood, coal, kerosene, paraffin poses a grave threat to people living in a household.
99% of the world's population breathe polluted air resulting from burning of fossil fuels, which threatens people's health. Wright says Africa should do more to tackle the problem.
Many African countries are in the early stages of development. This is the perfect opportunity for them to transition to renewable energy, which will help reduce air pollution. The WHO released air quality guidelines, which provides information to support countries to develop national standards to reduce air pollution.
According to the World Health Organization, at least 1 million people die prematurely every year in the Eastern Mediterranean region because of living and working in unhealthy environments. The WHO's regional director for the Eastern Mediterranean, Ahmed Al-Mandari, says toxic chemicals and other environmental risks threaten public health.
It is impossible to have a healthy society in a polluted environment. Tackling environmental risks is an essential part of WHO's vision of health for all by all in the East Mediterranean region. Environmental hazards such as climate change, polluted air, increase the region's vulnerability. To tackle these challenges, we need to address the root causes of ill health. Many aspects of environmental health go far beyond the health sector. On this World Health Day, I call on everyone to protect our planet and our health.
The WHO says extreme weather events, the loss of biodiversity, land degradation, and water scarcity are displacing people and compromising the ability to take control over their health and lives. The theme of the World Health Day 2022 is Our Planet, Our Health. The topic aims at directing global attention towards the well-being of the planet and all people living on it. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
Somalia's first women-run radio and television outlet has opened in the capital, Mogadishu. United Nations-sponsored Bilan Media will produce content aimed at addressing issues affecting women and champion women's rights in the conservative country. Ahmed Mohammed Adan reports from Mogadishu.
The launch of Pillan Media in Mogadishu marks another leap in the effort by women to secure their place in Somalia's patriarchal public arena. Pillan means bright and clear in the Somali language, and the founders say they will stay true to its meaning by shedding light on some of the most consequential issues relating to and affecting women. Nasra Mohammed Ibrahim is the editor at Pillan Media. This project is designed to overcome many challenges facing the community, she says. It will focus on the challenges facing women. She says there are stories about women which will be revealed because there are a lot of stories in the community and they don't allow them to be published. So Pillan will reveal those stories. By going all female, Pillan hopes to break the barriers in Somalia's conservative society where the issues such as rape, sexual assault, and women's medical issues are often ignored. Pillan says it does not seek to compete with the mainstream media, but to chart its course in elevating the voices of women and influencing the agenda in the male-dominated society. Fatih Muhammad Ahmed is the deputy editor at Pillan Media. She says, I can say that the reason for the formation of this media outlet for women is that in most parts of Mogadishu and Somalia as whole, they are media outlets where both men and women work but are managed and owned by men. The circumstances of women's needs are not discussed in depth. For example, violence against women is not discussed in depth. Ahmed says the owners of the station are not out to make a profit. It is not about making money. It is about showcasing the productivity and power of women. So we want to improve our skills and present them at a place free from corruption and abuse by men. Practitioners in the industry say the launch of female-only media house is a bold step in a country where Islamist militant groups do not hesitate to harm or kill journalists. The situation is even worse for female journalists who have to bottle other forms of challenges such as sexual harassment in newsrooms, cultural stereotypes, pressures from families, as well as low pay compared to male counterparts. Hinda Jama is the head of gender affairs at the Somali Journalist Syndicates. The potential challenges to this radio station are many, she says. As the radio is only operated by women, women could face challenges from Somali culture. Also, she says, Somali society is not accustomed to women doing things alone or being journalists working alone, and most of people are not aware of it. Religious-wise, she adds, some clerics may consider women unworthy to speak in the media. The answer will come soon as to whether the station can meet these challenges. Pillan is scheduled to go on the air April 25th. Ahmed Mohammed for VOA News, Mogadishu.
And in Uganda, one young woman has graced a job dominated by men, auto mechanics. Reporter Mungume Davis Rwakarinj caught up with her and files this report from Kampala.
If you find that the terminals, you measure them using a voltmeter and...
21-year-old Ainomu Jishamase Nkankara said it's important to check the battery levels when your car fails to start. I spoke to her at New Garage, located in the Kampala suburb of Kasangati. Marse shares her work with 15 other mechanics, all of them men. Her journey started when she joined Neo Garage as a receptionist. She says it was not easy convincing her employers to join the auto mechanics department 2 years ago.
As I was seeing these people are operating on cars, I picked interest and I talked to my boss. I was like, I can also work as a mechanic. At first he couldn't believe, but after he gave me a chance, he took me to school.
After 6 months of training, Marse was sent back to the garage, ready to face the machines. She says it was challenging.
The very first day after school, I worked on a tire. Though it was a tire of these big cars, so it was too heavy for me. Yeah, but I was very happy that day, and yeah, that encouraged me so much, and I knew I would make it.
At times, Marse says some clients need a lot of convincing that she too can work on their cars. Driver Timothy Motevi says we only give a few gigs to Marse simply because she's a woman.
I don't trust female mechanics. I always trust men because there are some things like or some nuts which need some man's power, whereby a woman cannot fix it well. So with these other things, then I can give the woman.
John Collins Mugamba, the chief mechanic here, says all the boys at the garage have been there to give a hand when Marse needs some money manpower. Mugamba says what men can do, women too can do.
I like the courage that she went in for this job because most of the ladies shy away. Then on the other side, of course, she's always on time. She's one person who likes or who is always learning, asking questions. So she has all the gears to be into the job.
Marse says for now, she's perfecting her skills with one big ambition, starting her own garage so she can be able to employ other female mechanics in the country. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now end the show with a Luganda song. We have been listening to a Luganda song. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking part to be with us this evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Stani alinefujo.